I confess that the last sermon I preached here I ended up using for my council sermon. Grow up. I remember that sermon with mixed feelings from being here. I'm glad I feel a lot better tonight than I did that day. And I ended up using that in other places, and so I told my wife, I don't know that I have a council sermon for Shirksville. I've already preached it here. And she said, well, why don't you look back and use one of the first council sermons you ever preached at Shirksville? So this one was not a council sermon, but I look back to the first sermon that I have ever preached here, and it was from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, let us run the race before us. That was in, if I'm not mistaken, should have kept the paper, but I do have it at home. I think it was first Sunday that I was here after I found out we needed to move to Pennsylvania 32 and a half years ago. But the focus here is the toughness, how hard the Christian life is. And if you came tonight wanting me to say that you can get to heaven on a rocking chair, I can't say that. I can't say it gets easier the older you get. In fact, sometimes we hear more things and we have more struggles in our minds as we get older. So I really encourage you to give your heart to the Lord in your youth, like our brother was encouraging. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth before the evil days come, because the Bible tells us it just gets worse. And if you find an old person saying, yeah, it's gotten easier and easier, I'm not sure how to put that, although that's always the way I feel, that sometime it's going to start getting easier. Beginning in chapter 11, verse 32, and what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having received a good report through faith, received not the promise. They went through all of that and they received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin, and ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. For furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. But he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For ye know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. Verse 1 carries the thought of running. And I will admit that it's been a long time since I've been involved in any kind of sports. But when I did enjoy sports, running was the one that I liked the best. Because I was pretty dangerous when it came to throwing a ball, softball or a hardball or a football or a basketball. There's just no telling where it would go. But when you could run, that you could do, especially long distance running. But it's been a long time since I ran 5 or 6 or 7 miles. It used to be something that was a lot of fun. But you know, as you get older and you think about that kind of exercise, but the Bible uses those illustrations, and it's not just running. In 2 Timothy, uses a soldier, the soldier illustration. And in 2 Timothy 2:5, it's the athlete. And in 2 Timothy 2:6, it's the farmer. Because in all of these phases of life, there's something we can learn. Tonight we want to learn from the runner. The free grace doctrine that all you have to do is believe if you want to be saved, and if you want to be a disciple, you have to work, is a false doctrine. But Jude and Peter both warned us it was coming, that in the last days they would come teaching false doctrines, turn the grace of God into lasciviousness. And I know you hear me say that a lot, but there's a lot of people who believe that if you want to get to heaven, all you have to do is believe. If you try to do anything to get to heaven, then you won't get there because it's a works-based religion. But now if you want to be a disciple, then you have to work. And that's where this comes in. I want to tell you something. The Bible that I read presents that if you want to get to heaven, you have to be willing to exert yourself as with great effort. And if you try to get there on a rocking chair, it won't happen. Paul frequently used illustrations from life. And in this illustration, sometimes he picks up the runner, sometimes he talks about the race, sometimes he talks about the rules, sometimes he talks about the field. But running seems to be his favorite, and there's at least 4 passages in the New Testament, some of which we will look at tonight, where he describes the Christian life as being a race. I won't look at Galatians. He says, lest I should have run or had run in vain in chapter 2, verse 2. And in chapter 5, 7, he says, ye did run well. And Philippians 2, 16, I'm not going to use that one either. He says he's concerned that he has not run in vain. But this is a common thing. But the word run, if you go in Greek, you find out that it means to incur extreme peril, which requires the exertion and concentration, all of one's efforts to overcome the obstacle. And so it was kind of the hardest thing that you could do. And tonight, we need to get it out of our head that it's really not that hard to get to heaven. We need to get it in our heads that I can expect to pay a great price to get there. Now, back in the day, it's interesting, when I started preaching, I liked these letters, okay, and start every point with the same letter. And so these all start with A's. I like to use those 4. The runner's audience, and then the runner's attitudes, and then the runner's activities, and finally his award, the runner's award. So they all 4 points start with A's, and I'd like to just ponder them a little bit. Now the word audience probably doesn't fit, because the word witnesses, the great cloud of witnesses that's around us, gives you the idea that they're all looking at you. But we don't know that the people in heaven can see us, and we don't know that they can't. The Bible never says they can or can't, okay? But right after Hebrews 11, he has talked about all of these people who made it. And we like to think about, now the word witnesses means martyrs. It actually comes to us in the English as the word martyrs. The Greek word is martyro, or something of that nature. And we are surrounded everywhere we look in chapter 11. There are people who paid a high price, and I would like to just think about them. Heroes of faith surround us like a cloud. There's a lot of people who already made it. And I make it sound difficult tonight, but I would like to encourage us with the thought that there are a lot of people who've already made it. It seems like right now we're hearing of a lot of funerals, and Sister Dorothy died this morning. Shank. And I had to think about one more person went home. Somebody from the church where we used to go whenever Sandra and I got married. Again and again, somebody from Central America. And somebody told me of somebody who took their own life. And it just seems like everywhere you go, you hear people being called home. This has happened before, but it always makes me wonder, is Jesus about to come back? Is that why he's turning so many people to think about eternity? Is this what's here? But these heroes of faith, and so we should not think it's impossible to get there, because there's a great cloud of people who paid the price and are there. And that should give us the courage, even though there are few that find it, we should give us the courage to go onward. Another thought about this is that the tests we face today are nothing new. There's not a thing that 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us that no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But you can find somebody in this list who faced something similar to what you're struggling with. You can find them. You can find a Bible illustration. 1 Corinthians 10 tells us that we're supposed to read those stories and think about what they learned so that we would not be partaker of evil things, that we would not fall by the way. And so the tests we face today are nothing new. Perhaps they are new for us. But just because they're new for us, shouldn't make us think that, well, it's not fair. Nobody else ever had this, because almost everybody did. I mean, many others did. But they, thirdly, faced their test. They faced our test and were victorious. They faced the same thing we did, and they proved that a human being, even without the Holy Spirit or without the New Testament or without the church, they proved that you could live and find your way through that. You know, we would like to pity ourselves. And then in verse 40, it says our heroes had a more difficult time than we do. God has provided some better thing for us. But the last thing I notice is that our victory in some way sweetens their success. That they without us should not be made perfect. Well, I want to tell you something. We without them would not be made perfect either. There's just something of blessed that's about it to see that, you know, they had a real life. They did not know what their outcome would be. Many of them did not know when they would get their deliverance. But you look at them living in caves and going through all kinds of things, and some were sawn asunder. Some got deliverance, and some went on and died. And here we are complaining about living in America and having new houses and cars and money and everything is going well, but we think we got it hard. Well, we need an attitude adjustment, don't we? So let's go to attitudes next. Lay aside every weight. I'm just going to pick out the two things in chapter 12, verse 1. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin. I take it that weights are not sins. But he says, you know, just like a runner doesn't saddle himself up with extra burdens to carry, we really need to knock out any other goals that we have in life. Well, wait a minute. I don't want to go there yet. What are the weights that can weigh you down? There are legitimate burdens that we have to decide, you know what, I'm going to lay that aside. As you look back at your childhood, I hear this a lot, people who have a lot of hurts from their childhood. Were the things that happened to you and things that you were hurt with that you couldn't help? The way you were treated, the way you were talked about, the way your dad treated you or your mom or somebody else? You know what to do with that? Lay aside. Don't carry it. Because whenever you're a child, you think as a child. When you become a man, you put away childish things. You look back at that in life and say, you know what? God had some things for me to learn in that. But that doesn't have to be something that bogs me down. I can't change what happened. I can accept it and I can move on. Why would you miss heaven because somebody didn't treat you right, something you couldn't change anyway? We all know that we did things when we were children and or things that were said. And I'm not saying run away from responsibilities or sins. You say, well, I never got told no. Well, you know it now. Okay, accept that. Or whatever you might see was lacking in your childhood, you have the ability to see through that and lay it aside. Lay aside that weight. So then when you were a young person, what were you going to do? Well, you're going to get married. You're going to have a business. You're going to make $1 million. You're going to be successful. Whatever your goals were. I would like to say, lay aside youthful illusions, okay? Because what if you would accomplish one of those dreams and you would become fabulously rich, but you missed heaven? What about the weights that can easily make you miss the goal you have in mind? The adult dreams or the youthful illusions that tantalized you and you really, really motivated you. I remember Brother Cliff does still seem like a young man, but I remember when I was younger than when I first met him and some of the boys at Bible school, and there was one that was going to be a millionaire before he was 30, and I think I kept some of those things to myself. I don't know, but I had dreams. There were things you were going to do, and when you wake up to adult realities, you realize that they're really not all that important at all. Let them go. I wonder if we as a people sometimes highlight the things that really should be, it's okay if you die poor. It's okay if you don't have the nicest vehicle. It's okay, isn't it? If your goal is souls in heaven, it makes a whole different way of living. Then there's social competitions. Somebody's going to pass you up, or they talk bad about you, or they remember bad things about you. Lay it aside. Lay it aside. It's okay. Somebody's going to be bragging you up, and somebody's going to be cutting you down. Don't. Just let it go, okay? That's the weights that can so easily beset us. Evaluate the things that bug and bother you and see whether they are very important or not. And the sin. I almost preached the whole sermon on this one because the same thing I was wrestling with grow up, I was wrestling in Psalm 51 because of teaching at Shepherd's Fold. King David wrote the psalm, and in that psalm, he kept saying how he needed cleansing, but he also kept saying that he needed truth in the inward parts. We all need cleansing, but David, even after he got his life cleaned up, he needed to start telling himself the truth inside. And when it comes to laying aside sin, the very first part of laying aside sin is we need to tell ourselves the truth about sin. I would just like to try some of these things on. What if David, I have about six things written down, seven I guess, two of them come from New Testament passages. What if David, if he would have said, my age and years and sacrifices of being close to the Lord have not earned me the privilege to dodge responsibility or to flirt with sin? What if he would have told himself that? That's the truth, isn't it? But do any of the rest of you have these little sneaking thoughts in as you've been good for a long time? It's probably all right if you do a little few things that are off to the side a little bit. Does that ever come to you? There was David, good year after year, but now all of a sudden he could look and he could do something. It gave him a thrill that he didn't have otherwise. You know, that's a dangerous thing. That's a lie from the devil. My age and years and sacrifices of being close to the Lord have not earned me the privilege to dodge responsibility and go out to battle or to flirt with sin. Number two, what if he had told himself, sin always costs more than it pays, even when everything in me wants to do wrong? You ever have that where what's in you, you want to do wrong and you just want to do wrong and it seems like you could sin and get away with it. The truth of the matter is that we need in our inward parts is that sin always costs more than it pays. It always does. It always does. That's the truth. We're talking about laying aside the sin that does easily beset us. And I'm talking about the truth that we need. Number three, I cannot toy with sin even though I can easily figure out a way to make it look like it's okay. We were talking about that at Shepherd's Fold today. In Romans chapter 13, he says, make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Never figure out a way to give yourself at once. Never figure out a way to justify what you're doing if it is wrong. Number four, I have sinned, and confessing it will have consequences. But if I cover my sin with more sin, the reaping will be many times worse. What if David would have stopped after the first sin? Made full confession. Not murdered the man, not murdered Uriah, would have changed his life. What? We don't know how that would be because he didn't do that, but it certainly would have been better. And yet the devil always comes and says, if you confess your sins, it'll be worse than if you cover it. Even if you have to do something worse to cover it than what you did in the first place. And so these things come sneaking in. I'm talking about the kind of things that we can think in our mind. Number five, even though my sin is covered, I may be sure my sin will find me out. We need to tell ourselves that. I must tell myself that even though my sin may be unknown, I may be sure my sin will find me out. Now, 2 Timothy is two other passages where Paul talks about running the race, and I would just like you to turn there to see how they fit in with this. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, in the midst of the farmer and the soldier illustrations, he says in verse 5, and if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. In other words, any kind of competition, whether it's softball or volleyball or running a race, they all have rules. The game is bigger than we are. And we like when the rules apply to somebody else, okay? We like when somebody else breaks the rules and they get penalized for that. They miss a point or they lose a turn or whatever it is. When they get out of the bounds, we like that. But the fact of the matter is, if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. It doesn't matter who we are tonight. There are rules in the Christian life. It is bigger than we are. We are just going down the racetrack along with everybody else that has done it before us. And so we need to deal with that. And the other one that's about running is in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I'd like to go there yet about lay aside the sin. The Apostle Paul says that verse 24, start reading there while I read it in the Amplified. Do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run your race that you may lay hold of the prize and make it yours. Now every athlete who goes into training conducts himself temperately and restricts himself in all things. They do it to win a wreath that will soon wither, but we do it to receive a crown of eternal blessedness that cannot wither. Therefore I do not run uncertainly, without definite aim. I do not box like one beating the air and striking without an adversary. But like a boxer, I buffet my body, handle it roughly, discipline it by hardships, and subdue it, for fear that after proclaiming to others the gospel and things pertaining to it, I myself should become unfit, not stand the test, be unapproved, rejected as counterfeit. So where are you tonight? Can you understand that this lay aside every sin starts with dealing with our own body impulses and desires that are our snares? Because finally, it's not the other runners that are our biggest threat. It's not somebody in our life that's not nice to us. Our biggest threat is our own human nature. And Paul says, I have to beat that up if I'm going to win. How could you win a race by beating up your body? Well, that's the way this race is. Now we like to go to the runner's activities, and back to chapter 11, or chapter 12, I'd like for you to just notice the attitudes are deep-rooted thinking patterns, and I dealt with that first because it seems to me that that affects how we actually do the running then. But he says there's some ways that we need to remember as it comes to running. In verse 1, he says, run with patience. And that word patience is hupomeno, one of my favorite Greek words, which means just stay under. Hupo means under. Hyper means over, and hupo means under. And meno, we get our word remain out of that. And so the picture here, let us run with patience. But they always stick this in along with it. Stay under with cheerful endurance, with a cheerful attitude. So you're stuck in a life that's going nowhere. Just stay under it. Just stay there. That's what he's saying. Let's run with patience the race that is set before us, with cheerful endurance, staying within your calling. Again and again in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 7 is another example. Are you called? Let every man abide in the calling wherewith he is called. You can always imagine and daydream somebody else having a better life. But the runner stays on his track. Now, verse 2 says, looking unto Jesus. Keep looking at Jesus. There's something that happens in our attitude, back to attitude now. But when we keep our focus on Christ, for one thing, it keeps us from looking back. A cardinal rule of the runner is don't look back. Sometimes you'll read about or hear about an athlete who quit too soon or looked back to see how far ahead they were of the competition, started looking around and lost their stride and lost the race. Don't look back. Looking unto Jesus. Looking unto Jesus. Keep your eyes on him is the runner's activity. So do it. Run, because if you don't run, you're not a runner. Run with patience. And number 2, keep looking at Jesus. And then verse 3 says, consider him. Stop and think about what Jesus had to go through. And so in your mind, while you're thinking, as you're running, you just go back over and over again, him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself. Because that changes your attitude. And then he says, embrace chastisements. Now that's my summary of the next number of verses here from 4 to 11. Because when you get chastised, when we suffer for doing what's right, or whenever we suffer for when we've done wrong, it's easy to become discouraged about that. And he makes it very plain that if you have a father and you're a child, you'll get spanked. That's just the way it is. If you have a father and you are a child, you will get spanked. If you live without spankings, then you're an illegitimate child. Or if you think your spankings come from another source other than your father, you're an illegitimate child. We have to see the connection between those two. And so we embrace the chastisements. And even while I'm saying that, I feel like a hypocrite because I don't like spankings. I don't like it when I don't get my way. I don't like it when I get corrections. I don't like it. But he says, whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. And that's what we have to see in life. We can always imagine a perfect life somewhere or something better than what we have. And the world wants us to do that. But he says, accept your chastisements and embrace them because they're doing you good. Then in verse 12, he says, make sure you help the runner beside you. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. If you're a runner and you want to win the race, take time to help somebody else running along. Wait a minute. Well, it is true in 1 Corinthians 9. He says you need to run as if you're the only person going to win. But here he says, we don't know if Paul wrote this, probably, but he says, the only way you're going to win the race is if you turn around and make sure you help other people who are running alongside of you. Why is it that we tend to look at the people who God has dropped us in the race beside and look at them like competition and like somebody we need to fight with and argue with? Do you think that we will know each other in a million years? Do you think that we will be able to talk about what happened back at Shirksville? Don't we want to be making memories now that we really tried to help each other to get to heaven, rather than that we spent our time boxing each other on the ears or something, you know? Because he says, but a runner can't. If you're going to run, you can't be taking time to pick up people's hands and help feeble knees. Yes, you can. That's the paradox of this race. And the other paradox of the race is in verse 13, where he says, even take time to stop and work on the trail. Make sure that you leave a better example for how to make it through in the race than what you got. You say, well, people that went before me, they didn't do very well about how they lived. He doesn't say we need to stop and criticize the ones who ran before us. In fact, it assumes that there will be some crooks and turns in the paths that need to be straightened out. Lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it be healed. What if somebody that you knew and you had an attitude about didn't make it to heaven? How will you feel about that? Because you made it harder for them, because you were critical of them, or whatever it was. He says, straighten out the paths. Make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. It's, as far as I can tell, it's still the running illustration, right? It's still the runner and the running and what happens. And so we need to spend time investing in making a clear path, because the secret is you can't bless other people without it coming back to bless you. And it's also true you can't curse other people without it coming back to curse you. That's just the way it works in life. Looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God. I wish Jacob would have gone out of his way to help Esau not to have a bitter attitude. Finally, Esau had to make his choice. But it isn't that they just that they grew apart in life. It sounds like they're apart in eternity, and then there's no way to bring it back together again at all. What about the people in your life, your family? Is your influence helping them find their way? Is your competition over the inheritance, or your competition over whatever it might be, making it easier for people to get to heaven or harder? It's just so many things to think about with that. The last one is the runner's award. It does fit. I want to keep saying reward, but it has to start with an A when you use this kind of an outline. And so we're going to use the runner's award. In the end of chapter 10, he says, verse 35, cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of, yes, reward. For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he that shall come, and will not tarry. The Bible still says the truth. Jesus is coming back. And every sacrifice you make for the Christian life will be worth it. Now the just shall live by faith. If you believe that God is real and he's watching you every minute of your life and walking with you, you will live. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but of them that believe to the saving of the soul. That's where we want to be, pressing on all the way home. Well, I hope this little bit of a meditation, let us run the race before us, thinking about the runner's audience, people who made it, the runner's attitudes, being willing to set aside other goals, and especially tell ourselves the truth about sin, and then the activities, what's involved, and finally the award at the end, will help you, help me, determine to keep on living the Christian life, because it's not supposed to be easy, and just because it's tough doesn't mean that you're not doing the right thing. May God bless you as you ponder these truths and the truths in Ecclesiastes, because I'm sure the devil will have challenges for you around the corner.